This is Screen Divers. In this week's episode, we'll be talking about Loaded Weapon 1, directed by Jin Quintano, with a screenplay by Don Holly and Jin Quintano, a story by Don Holly and Tori Tallon, produced by Susan Todd and David Willis, distributed by New Line Cinema, and starring Emilio Estevez, Samuel Jackson, John Lovitz, Tim Curry, Katy Ireland, William Shatner, Whoopi Goldberg, and 10,000 other actors. This movie has a running time of 83 minutes, and it was made for $8.2 million, and it made $51 million.
That is crazy.
How are you guys?
I'm good. How about you?
I am violently hangover, and you know this, Steve. So
yeah, I do.
And to our listeners, it was a rare occurrence in which, in order to withstand this movie, which got increasingly better as we drank, hence why it's called Loaded Weapon, probably. Just like the main protagonist of this movie, Jack Colt, we drank profusely. And at one point throughout the entire thing, I turned around to Steve and I said, man, the third act of this movie is way better than the rest of it. It should be the other way around. It's getting better. And 2 hours later, I was hugging a bucket. That's, you know. How are you, Ricky?
I am well, sir. Good morrow.
Fair enough. So, hey, a quintessential question needs to be asked. What is this movie about, Ricky?
There are spoofs. There are worse spoofs. And then there are loaded weapons. This is one of those.
So, are you going to take responsibility for picking this movie?
Look, I am going to take responsibility, but you know what? We're going to have Steve ask his questions.
Hey, what was your first experience of this movie?
I watched this movie very, very regularly at the age of 9 or 10. And that will probably sum up why this movie has very fond memories in my brain.
Yes, yes, we've all done that. But on this viewing in particular, from my side, this is the perfect stoners movie. It is the perfect stoners movie, and it is a drinking movie as well. If you are, well, I know this because the movie improved as we were getting drunk. And it's it really, like, by the third act, we were laughing. We were just laughing. The last half an hour of this movie, first of all, I don't think you need to drink, but the last half an hour of this movie is actually funnier than the first three sections.
I think mainly because it pays off so well later on.
Yeah, we get more Lovitz as well.
Yeah.
Lovitz is great in this, man. Okay, well, how are we going to do this, man? Because it's... I don't even know how we tackle a movie like this.
Let's continue. Umber, when did you first ever experience this film?
I think I watched it shortly after release. I think I rented it. I was a smoker, and I enjoyed it. Just everything came back. You know, the memories came back while watching it. Plus, I don't know how or why, but I'm pretty sure I rewatched this last year. And I don't know why. I think I watched an interview with William Shatner or something, or someone talking about Shatner, and there was a segment. It's the segment when William Shatner puts his face inside the tank. And I thought, oh my God, I need to rewatch this movie. And it was a horrific mistake, but
especially if sober.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are some parts of this are really, really funny. Like, I've got my favorite bits in it, but... And I forgot how funny Lovitz is, man. Like, les comédies, fini.
Fini.
Oh, I've never heard anyone deliver the line, orange.
Orange.
He does, is it Joe Getz, Steve? He does a Joe Pesci, right?
He does a Lethal Weapon 2, Joe Pesci, being Joey Getz.
Yeah. And the segments from different. I mean, it's riffing on all action movies, but it's riffing on Lethal Weapon 1, 2, and 3. Like, yes. I think because by that time, those were the installments that were out. I don't know. Someone check when Lethal Weapon 4 came out.
Oh, God.
Oh, that was way after this. This was
it must have been 97, maybe? 96, 97? Or even 98?
Weapon 4 so was 98.
98, there you go. Because I remember I saw that in Australia.
But Lethal Weapon 3, where Joe Pesci was more of a stay, like, you know, more part of the team, was in 92. So it was like the year before this got released.
Yeah. I mean, the opening sequence of this movie, it's absolute dog shit. The entire sequence.
Kiwi Jetty? Kiwi Jetty.
Jetty.
I hate Kiwi Jetty.
Oh, man. They take the piss out of Southeast Asians in this. Because, come on.
There's a lot of stuff that in the start of this where I have fond, very fond memories of. And I think, if it wasn't for this film, the comedy that I love now, the irreverent comedies that I love now, it got shaped by this film. Just how stupid this film is. And if you can't laugh at it at the time, then you're never going to laugh at it ever again. But anyway, Steve, you're the final one. When did you first experience this one?
1993 in the cinema.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. So nice. Being a big Lethal Weapon fan at the time, especially 1, 2, 3, 4, not so much. But obviously, anything which was going to riff on Lethal Weapon, we saw the trailers and kind of got the idea it was going to be fun. And I went on a Saturday afternoon. And I was young enough and probably a little bit stupid to actually enjoy it.
No, but there's a place for this movie.
Yeah,
there's a place for this one. Like, if you put any kid in front of it, like, you know, like a child or a tween, they'll enjoy it. You know, like, objectively, all right. Besides the bits that we're going to talk about, it is one of those comedies that falls under the category of movies like Airplane and The Naked Gun. But the thing is, when you put it next to Naked Gun, doesn't stand a chance.
Not a chance.
And I think it's because you do have Leslie Nielsen in Naked Gun, and he slays in that role. You know, Frank Drebin will always be a funny character. Just it's, you know, we don't talk about Leslie Nielsen enough. At some point, I think every once in a while we should do one of the movies that are in that vein. But at the same time, when this one hits, when it fails, when the jokes fall flat, you can hear a cacophonic, disastrous sound, you know,
like piano falling from a skyscraper situation.
When the jokes don't hit in this, you will roll your eyes inside your head.
God.
But when they do hit, it's really funny.
It is. You know, it was originally based for a TV series called Sledgehammer. Scripts.
I adore that series.
Yeah. So, but it was originally intended for Sledgehammer movie. Yeah,
Sledgehammer was a take on Harry Callahan.
Yeah.
You know, it's his entire character was, and he was fantastic in that role. What's his name? What's the name of the actor that played him?
Oh my God. Alan Spencer, was it?
Was it Hammer? Was that his name?
Hammer. Yeah. Hammer. Sledgehammer. Yeah.
It's also a shame when this movie got released. This movie got released in early 1993. And it's funny how they name dropped another movie that starred Emilio Estevez's brother, Hot Shots, because that same year, Hot Shots Part 2 got released. And if you compare both films, you know which one won,
of
basically.
I went to see Hot Shots in the theater.
I went one to see Hot two. Shots Part 2, so
And I don't know why the fuck you didn't pick that, Ricky.
I think for me, I wanted to rewatch Tim. This all came about because it was National Girl Scout Cookie Day. And on Facebook, there was a clip of Tim Curry going, "Wilderness Girls," and I was like, "Oh my God, oh, Loaded Weapon. Oh my God. Yeah.
There is one thing, you know, the logo of the Scout Girls. There's the logo of the company. Yep. I want that on a t-shirt because it looks amazing. And I'm, you know, there's a lot of companies that make t-shirts out there, like T-Villain or QWERTY. We're not sponsored by them, but now we should be. I buy from both. And they do a lot of mashup t-shirts. So there's like, you know, mashups of nostalgia from the 80s or the 90s of two different things and, you know, coming together. Like, I'll give you an example. I've got Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis doing the dance that they do, the ghost dance they do in Beetlejuice. Yeah. But the movement that they're doing are Mia Wallace and Vincent Vega in Pulp Fiction.
Nice.
So, you know what I mean? And if you've watched both movies, put them together. I've got a lot of stuff like that, and it's kind of cool. I think you've seen the one that I have of Scott Pilgrim versus the World, but it's the Seven with the boys in the middle. Yeah. Bought it from QWERTY. QWERTY.com. But yeah, it's
subscribe.
And I've got my my Evil Dead / Boba Fett t-shirt.
Yeah,
where it's the Evil Dead, coming out of a Sarlacc pet kind of situation.
Yeah, for anyone listening to our show, just check him out. Check out tvillain.com, I think, and the other one is I can't believe I just said .com. www.
https.
Let's just put it in the show notes, yeah?
Holy shit, mate. Out there in the interwebs. So, yeah, again, we've got Emilio Estevez playing Jack Colt. It's a parody of Martin Riggs from Little Weapon. We've got Samuel Jackson, who plays Sergeant Wes Luger, a parody of Martek from... You know, he even does the hat turn at one point before aiming his gun. There's bits, like entire sequences that I actually lifted from, like we were saying earlier, from Little Weapon 1, 2, or 3. And there's the entire, like, I'll show you my scars bit that Riggs does in, I think it was Little Weapon 2, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
and they start getting it on. Yeah.
Diplomatic immunity. I love that. I've got a South African colleague of mine. Every single time he says something, because his humor is quite off color at work, and that's why we're friends. I always say to him, "Don't worry, man. Diplomatic immunity." He's from Durban. Shout out to Brennan. He's a top guy. Anyway, so the cameos in this, there's endless cameos, and you mentioned earlier the references to Odd Shots. John Lovitz actually takes the piss out of me at one point. Yeah. Hey, this thing that you're doing, it's the same thing as...
But the funny thing, they don't mention Charlie Sheen's name, but Charlie Sheen is in this film as well.
Yeah.
Have you got anything smaller? No. Yeah. Have you got anything bigger? Yes.
There's an ad for Head and Shoulders in there at one point. Hey, but you don't have any dandruff. I know.
I think one of the weirdest things is that this film came out at exactly the right time, because you had spoof films a few years earlier. You had spoof films coming out in the same time. You had Mel Brooks working a lot around this era. Mm. You even had Wayne's World,
which it does the bit later on.
But the Head and Shoulders bit reminded me of, do you remember in Wayne's World when he's like, oh, I'm getting a headache. Here, try one of these. Oh, small, refreshing, orange. It has the same elements as those spoof films. It doesn't quite hit the mark apart from maybe 7-8 scenes, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, the entire bit with Whoopi Goldberg at the beginning, I wanted to headbutt Steve, because you weren't there, so otherwise I would have invited you, Ricky. But there's the entire when she it's hammy, and I love Whoopi Goldberg, dude. When I was a kid, Sister Act was one of my favorite movies. You know, it was, I remember the first time someone got me a bunch of VHS tapes. It was a nanny of mine or something, because I was sick, and she comes over and she brings me a bunch of VHS tapes, and one of them was Sister Act. I think it was later on, you know, because I we stayed in touch. I used to hang out with her as well afterwards. And I remember going to her place and rewatching that. And all of a sudden, the first time I saw Darkman was at her place. And I was like, oh, wow. It left. Yeah. Yeah. So, but Whoopi Goldberg, I mean, I love her in TNG as well. She's, you know, she's a titan, but when she's bad, she's really bad. And in this, it's fucking terrible.
It is terrible.
It's fucking terrible. Sorry, Whoopi.
Well, oh, you know, we've got Christopher Lambert in this movie as well, as a brief cameo.
Yeah, it's really, yeah. It's really blink bizarre. And you miss it. Yeah. It's really
where
bizarre.
Is he? He's a man with a car phone.
Yeah.
You're joking.
No, yeah, yeah, honestly. Yeah.
So, you know, this is like going back to Hail Caesar now, because he pretty much cameos in that too.
Yeah.
That's so what I was going to bring up. If you score this yeah. as high as Hail Caesar, then you are basically spitting on Christopher Lambert's career. Do you understand?
I don't know why you went 1920s.
Extra, extra. Read all about it.
Read all about it.
That's John Lovitz, by the way.
News high. Hi.
Hi.
Like a pterodactyl.
Oh my God. Flying but high look, above this movie's problems.
You know yes. what? You know what? There are so many terrible scenes in this. Let's focus on the scenes that were actually good. Now, as much as you didn't like Whoopi Goldberg's like extended scene where she is very hammy.
And Tim the fucking sixth door she opens.
Yeah. Tim Curry is amazing.
He's like, always amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And he doesn't drop that weird European, middle European accent. That
it's a
actually,
bit Swedish, it's a bit German.
It's a bit of everything, but it makes microfilm hilarious. You know,
he's riffing on a diehard villain.
Yeah, of course he is. You know? Yeah, it's great. Yeah. But it's absolutely amazing. It's spot on.
But also, there's the relationship between General Mortars, and which is played by William Shatner, phenomenally. Like every line, he chews through every line. And the thing is, I think he's doing it straight. He's playing the role almost straight, and that's why it works. He's so fucking hammy, man. Man, Shatner, I love Shatner. I absolutely love Shatner. You know, it's... But in this, the relationship that he has, General Mortars, as with Mr. Jigsaw, which is the character that Tim Curry plays, it's akin to Dana Dyer's character and, oh my God, legendary Australian actor in Commando.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Let's
yeah,
ask some Steam Bennett. The guy that plays Bennett. Yeah. What's his name? Oh, my God. Shame
we're
us.
Talking about him the
Dude,
other day.
Please. Please. Oh. And you know, every time I think of that guy, I think of fishnets, shirts, or vests.
Oh, it's chainmail.
Yeah, but it's like a requirement, right? Because he was in Mad Max as well, and he wears the same shit. I wonder if he's taking his own wardrobe to the set every
time. Surprised.
What's his name? Oh my
his
God,
name,
he's a legend.
You...
Oh my God, shame on all of us, mate. Shame on
Vernon,
all of us.
Vernon Wells.
There you go. So it's the relationship between, because, you know, there's Val Verde is the entire thing about, and there's a general that controls the island or whatever, and that's very commando-ish. Plus, there is a direct...
The commando.
There's an entire commando gearing up sequence in this. That montage, it's funny. And it's from Commando. It's like, and the music sounds like James Horner as well, like the ding 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 with the fucking marimba.
But it sounds like it's a Predator riff rather than Commando.
It sounds
riff.
Like James Horner music. Yeah. Like it's, you know.
And that's a good him putting on all of that stuff is a good example of a scene that doesn't work. Like. It's because you can see the punchline coming from a mile away that he's not going to be able to hold all of that weaponry.
Even if that scene doesn't work, the next sequence works because after he gears up, he goes through shortly afterwards. He goes through a fucking pothole, and when he comes out, the Ninja Turtles playing Trivia Pursuit. And Steve said those are the original actors as well. Like it's What is the question that? One of the turtles asked the other.
It was a Napoleon one?
Napoleonic Wars, That was unexpected. I forgot about it. So on top of the pothole as well, it says sewer. It just
doesn't even say New York.
As Estevez is removing, as Jack Colt removes the pothole, fucking Steve brings plausibility to a level to the sequence. He goes, oh, you wouldn't be able to do that. I'm like, what the fuck, man? What are you talking about? And I looked at him like, yeah, you're right. You wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, thanks for that. Let me enjoy my shitty movie in peace.
Yeah, but plausibility is fucking out the window here. You don't even want it. You don't want it. If it intrudes in the movie, just like, what is it? What is the human emotion that apparently is intruding the entire plot of this? It's uttered by William Shatner. And he says that compassion.
Oh, yeah.
Is what does he say? Your compassion is intruding.
It's
fucking great. I would love to have a movie or a series with that character in it, with General Mortis.
Yeah, don't you find though? So you know how we're used to the William Shatner.
I would call it Dictator, but Dick is spelled like CK. Dictator,
like Louis. would you say that Shatner's character is probably the least Shatner? Because Sally walked in and watched 5 minutes of the end, and she was like, that's not Shatner, because she didn't watch the whole movie with me, so she only watched like bits and bobs. She's like, no way is that Shatner. And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, he's not acting like Shatner. No, it's like the least William Shatner he's acting, right? There's no other film where he's actually acting.
I think it's more about his presence, you know, the essence of Shatner, maybe. I don't know. It's but yeah, she does have a point. It's,
yeah.
But it's inevitable that some of him will spill into any role.
Yeah. But I love the bit where he's like, oh, I do love working with smart people. They know when not to screw me. And it's really, it's actually delivered really well, because it hasn't got that, hi, I'm William Shatner. You know, he hasn't got that like sort of breakbeat that he normally puts into almost every other role he does.
We would be remiss if we didn't mention the piece of shit driven by Emilio Estevez in this, Jack Holt. All right, so I did my screen dive into IMCDB, the Internet Movie Car Database, for you listeners that haven't gotten around to taking a look. Yes, you can go online. There's a website called IMCDB. We are not sponsored by them in any way, shape, or form. But if you input the name of a movie, it will tell you the name of every single vehicle and model, the make and model of every single vehicle of the movie that you've selected. The car driven by Jack Colt is a 1964 Cadillac DeVille convertible, and it looks like absolute shit. It looks like it's it's just parked in a scrapyard somewhere.
And like this is why last week for Glengarry Glen Ross, I was like, isn't a Cadillac like the worst top prize?
Really? we would also be remiss if we didn't mention one of the cars that reminds me of my mom had one of these cars, man, when we lived in South America. She had one of these cars, and then I think in the beginning of the 80s, she had an Oldsmobile. But the one that I'm talking about wood paneling. Yes, for anyone young enough not to remember this, there was a time in which we didn't put wood. Like, it seems to me that as the decades progress, we're getting rid of anything wooden or faux wood inside cars. Right, there was a time in which it was an optional extra to get paneling or a certain type inside a Merc or a BMW or whatever. But there was a time in which that was outside the car. I don't know why we used to put wood panels on cars. What the fuck? Anyway.
It's for camouflage reasons, of course.
Yeah. It's to fit in the burbs. Which, by the way, I said the burbs. When I saw Rick Dakuman in this, I freaked out. Yeah. He's one of the guys on the panel in the Basic Instinct sequence. And when I saw him, I pointed at the screen aggressively, and I turned around to Steven and I went, Rick Dakuman, man!
Burbs!
And he goes, calm down. And I went, you wait until you start with your gun shit.
Let's just say both the main characters are actually named after guns.
Oh,
Colt and Luke.
Yes.
There you go. There you go.
Now, the car driven by Sergeant Wes Luger is a Dodge Colt. Yeah, it's a sandy, that beige kind of deflowerized color, light sand or whatever it is. and the wood paneling around it. It's like, oh, the entire sequence was like we're being chased, and then all of a sudden there's two dudes in the back of the car. It's like, then let's lose them, and then in the next sequence they're gone. I mean, if you're stoned, I can tell, like, if you're stoned, this would be, they'll have to call the paramedics. They'll have to call the paramedics because you are dying in a laughing seizure. For sure.
Or for sure. 10. I thought this was the greatest movie growing up. Like, it made me laugh as much as Naked Gun or Naked Gun 2.5.
It's, look, there are certain things that, you know, you can see. If you watch the movie before, you kind of anticipate. Because you don't remember the parts that are not funny, but you do anticipate the stuff that is very funny. I don't know why it's. If I was to talk with someone about this movie, well, we're doing that now. So how meta, but that's exactly what we're doing here. But if you would have to recommend this, or if you had some kinship with someone, all of a sudden this was the point in the conversation in which you clicked on this movie, you're not gonna go, "Oh, our shit was Whoopi Goldberg in that scene." No, you're gonna go, "Hey, and." I think one of the things that it's for me is like a pillar of this movie is Jack Cole's housing situation. It's his trailer on the beach, and the moment you go inside, it's like a fucking it's like a pillar. Yeah. Also, as soon as he mixed that drink, I said to Steve, "We gotta try that." I think it's three parts Bushmills. There's two parts. It's not Stolichnaya. Stolichnaya? How do you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Stoli, whatever, the vodka. And then chocolate syrup, which is an integral part. Also, there's a lot of product placement in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's actually, because alcohol is actually heavily advertised in this. There's a, you know, the vodka, you saw the label of the vodka, and I don't think that's random. That's proper sponsorship. The Jack Daniels, Jack is actually mentioned at one point in this as well. So yeah, there's a huge cast and a huge amount of cameos from character actors that have peppered our childhood. You know, like it's Charles Napier's in there, and he was in a bunch of stuff. Like, you know, what was it? Charles Napier was in everything. It was in Rambo. It was in 10,000 things, guys. Frank McRae is the guy that plays the captain.
Yeah.
And, you know, his performance is good, but it falters because I expected every line to come out of his mouth to be shouting. It should have been shouting all the way through, and he doesn't. There's bits in which it dips, and if you wanted to go balls out for that role, he should have screamed all the time to make it funny.
He played the exact same role better in Last Action Hero.
You're right.
Yes.
He did. Yes, he did. Bill Nunn was in this for a microsecond, blink and you miss it. Another black actor that is, you know, was everywhere. And then fucking James Doohan comes out of nowhere. And wasn't he also in Last Action Hero in a cameo, I think?
Yeah, what the fuck? I believe so.
When was Last Action Hero released?
Action Hero was released like the following year.
95 or 96, something like that.
It was pretty short after this one, yeah.
Yeah. Lynn Shay appears in this for a moment. I adore that woman. She's phenomenal. She's, you know, like she's in a lot of classic horror. Lynn Shay, the moment you see her, you remember who she is. She's an amazing character actress. Like she was in, even in like movies where you don't expect it, she's phenomenal. I left a memory burn. It's Detroit Rock City. Detroit Rock City is one of those movies I can watch eternally. I find that movie to still be very, very funny.
We've also got Paul Gleason. Playing the FBI agent.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
And obviously we've got the cameos from Denise Richards as well.
Yeah.
Which is
Charlie Sheen. They were married at the time.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, no, they got married afterwards. It was many years afterwards, but this was the first time they were on the same film together.
It's a shame because when this movie nails the trope, does it really well, and when it misses it, like we said earlier, that you can hear the swooshing of the miss. Like it's JT Walsh playing the receptionist guys in the CD hotel. It's fucking perfect. Is amazing.
That whole t-shirt bit is funny. That whole, like, him pulling out the t-shirt, like, do you recognize this woman? And then he's like, and then he pulls the body bag and opens it up. It is funny. It is essentially funny. I feel like I am trying to defend the film because I know you're going to be putting a lot on me by the end of it when you rate. But I just wanted to talk about one cameo that I completely forgot about because I remembered Corey Feldman.
I forgot about Corey Feldman in this. Yeah.
But straight after that is Phil Hartman, who bless Phil Hartman, who should have been with us for like a lot longer than he was. It was a tragedy what happened to him. Yeah. But everything that Phil Hartman's ever a part of is magic. And even though he's doing the worst stand-up jokes ever, it's still Phil Hartman. So it's still amazing.
Yeah, he is amazing. He will always be. But Dennis Leary at the piano doing a fucking Robert Palmer, dude, with the four models. I just thought, okay. I mean, you know, we meet General Mortis for the first time in that sequence, I think. I think that's when the character's introduced. And the entire exchange, the battle of the wits between the two of them, with Tim Curry calling it, opening a book and closing it with emphasis. It's so simple. But when the movie hits, again, it hits really hard. And it's a shame that the jokes that really land are so few.
But that scene, I still think, is amazing. So, you know, the first line that is like a quote is, "Act in haste, repent in leisure. But he who hesitates is lost. Never judge a book by its cover. What you see is what you get. Loose lips sink ships. Life is very short and there's no time for fussing or fighting, my friend." No, that's not good.
That's not good.
Oh, it's great, dude. And Eric Estrada, we see both of the chips. And with the moment, you know, a wave of nostalgia just ran through my entire, just coursed through my body when I saw them. Because even the remake of Chips, what's his name? He's got a podcast as well. He's married to Lake Bell. No, he's married to...
You're talking about Dan... I want to say Dan Shepard, but it isn't Dan Shepard.
It's Dax. Dax Shepard.
Dax Shepard.
Yeah. I mean, people remember him from Idiocracy. They're remembering. He's got 10,000 things going on. He's got a podcast. And he's always funny. I like him. He's funny. Yeah. And the Chips remake is actually gloriously underrated. Because
it's a good movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie. And also the message. There's a message to the movie as well, because he's addicted to oxycodone in it. And there's, you know, he goes through withdrawal and everything. But it's one of those movies that I can sit down and watch. I mean, the remake. But when I was a kid, if I was sick from school, there was all these reruns on television, and it was either Wonder Woman, Riptide, The A-Team, holy shit, Greatest American Hero, and Chips, and T.J. Hooker, by the way, with Shatner. These were shows that were running, and man, what a childhood. You know, they were made for us. They were made for adults. But you know what I mean? Like it was an insight into a world that it kind of fucked my mind, I think, this stuff growing up, because you think that that's the adult world. It's, you know what I mean? When you're a child, you see all the, because I wasn't kids. I was watching shows possibly Greatest American Hero was the one that was directed at children as well. But the rest of the shows, when you look at them, Wonder Woman as well, but T.J. Hooker wasn't, dude. Or Simon and Simon, these were, Magnum P.I. Like, there's some of the topics that were touched in the shows were quite adult themed.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was nice to see Poncherello and, fuck, what's the name of the other? Oh, this is shameful. And I'm living the same because fucking
you, because like, you know, I found it was so heartwarming what you were saying, and then you're like, oh, dog shit.
Yeah, but it was nice to see the chips, man. Yeah. It was nice to see
both. Larry Wilcox, Eric Estrada, Larry Wilcox. Yeah.
No, but what was the name? That's the name of the actor, but what was the name of Poncherello? Was Estrada's character? What was the name of the other cop?
Of in Larry the show,
I'm on my brain, man. So, Poncherello, John Baker.
Yeah, John Baker.
Yeah, I don't remember the theme tune from Chips. I wonder and this is where I put I'm going to put it in the show.
Thank you. Steve, tell us about guns.
Oh, man. Okay, so here's a chips fact.
Oh,
in chips,
Jesus
Christ. They never, famously never drew their guns or fired a shot in chips.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh.
And yeah. So in this, they're firing like 20 bullets a minute.
Yep.
Oh, yep. Oh, is that what's going on? Okay, because both of them are guns drawn. And they're in the shoot. Maybe it was the joke, you think? And it went over our heads?
Maybe.
Okay. Okay.
But obviously, there's that gun, which we were really interested in, which is used by Mr. Jigsaw, Tim Curry. And that's
a real gun?
It's a real gun. It's a Whitley Hunter 8-inch barrel. It's a 0.475 Whitley.
You are the fucking guy from Police Academy.
Can you tell me about the flamethrower that the unfortunate Asian convenient characters were? But no, I don't really want to know. I wanted to test your knowledge a little bit further.
So,
by the way, Tackle Barry.
Okay, so the flamethrower.
You're Tackle Barry from Police Academy.
Oh, he's got it. He's got the flamethrower.
It seems to be an M2. The actor's holding it sideways, which is a bit of a problem. So it's a Second World War.
Are you talking about the guys in the 7-Eleven?
Flamethrower. The clerks,
That came fucking out of nowhere, man. That came out of nowhere, man.
But we get the M72 law being fired at the cans. And we've also got...
the one that you just described, that firing at the cans, was that the weapon that like produced all of those peeing shots from
this is oh my god, that's gonna be something else. I think that was a Beretta or something like that. That was a Tommy gun, M1928.
Can you tell me this gun that I'm about to put in my mouth? Can you tell me what it is?
That's your fingers, mate.
No, mate. Oh, okay. All right.
But Umber, can you put in the, you know, Cowboy Bebop? They have that Bounty Hunter theme song that they play every so often. Like, hey, Bounty Hunter. Yeah, can you put that in right now? Good. Okay.
Absolutely. Okay, Steve. Okay, Hotshot. In the opening sequence of this movie, when he goes to the 7-Eleven or the corner store, whatever it is, he picks up a magazine from the stand, right? And as he opens it, he flips it. That joke fucking rankled straight away.
Yeah.
With all the pamphlets and the flyers, and then there's a pile of them. But anyway, there's like a centerfold inside this magazine, and there's a gun. Inside, it's an AR. It looks like an automated rifle of some kind.
What
is that gun?
So
Jacked. Look for it. All right, I want to know, dude, because that's
I can't think of the. It was an automatic. It was something which is used as a anti-personnel kind of gun because it's a. It's a big chunky
one. It's a big
one.
Gun, yeah.
So it looks like the same kind of one which is used in Rambo Part 2.
Right.
But I can't think of it. It could be a Heckler Koch, maybe, because the same as what's used in the helicopter gunner check seat.
Oh,
because that's a Heckler Koch HK21. There. Yeah.
This is when they shoot down and they destroy Jack Cole's house, right? You're talking about the sequence where there's a dude on the helicopter and he's shooting down the beach. He's shooting all over the beach. I think that happens in one of the Little Weapons, right? They fuck up his trailer.
The second one.
Yeah, and all of a sudden Bruce Willis shows up. And I think this is shortly, because it was in 92 or 93 that we got Die Hard 3, which is one of my favorites in the series, by the way, with Samuel Jackson.
92, was it?
So I wonder if he's returning the favor by appearing in this, because, I mean, this was released in February the 5th, 1993.
So, actually, Die Hard with a Vengeance was 95.
Holy shit. Well, there you go, mate. So there's a thread between... Maybe that's how they...
There's also the thread. No, because...
It's a Pulp Fiction thread, but they never met on set, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
The key reason why Bruce Willis turns up in this is because his brother, David Willis, who's producer.
There you go. Makes sense, However, now that I'm... Because I said something, and I don't know if I can back it up, but in Pulp Fiction... We've seen it endless times, yeah? And it's another movie that it doesn't matter. We don't even have to say, like, it's a staple. The idea is that it's phenomenal and it's hard to walk away. Like, if there's a sequence, if it's playing on somebody's screen and you're walking by, I'll stop every time. It's just, you know, and I know it by heart, but I can remember a scene where Butch and Jules meet because I think there's the allusion to it. Because I think Vince and Jules walk inside the Marcellus Wallace den or dive bar or whatever the fuck it is, and they interrupt the meeting, or they're waiting. They're both waiting because he's having a meeting with Butch, and it's the entire speech about, you know, that thing that you will feel in the back of your, you know, like pride, basically the entire pride speech. But I'm pretty sure that they may have never met on that set, you know. No. Like it's possible, but they certainly have met in this one, I'm pretty sure, although the scene is not with the two of them together again. So actually there's no other actor in that sequence, it's just Bruce. It's just Bruno. It was his 70th birthday last week, this week actually. And every time I see him, I mean, I'm sure he's happy at the moment. It seems that he's close to his family and everything else. But this aphasia thing is painful. It's painful to see him degrading. But he seems happy. It's just that we'll never see him in another movie again. And it's a damn shame because I really liked Willis.
Yeah.
Even in a bad movie. I mean, it got hammy towards the end of his career. But as we were watching this, I turned around to Steve. I stated the obvious, which is, fuck, man, in 93, this guy was on top of the world. Mm-hmm. He was on top of the world. He was the biggest action star ever.
Like, I kid you not. From a guy who came from, Moonlighting? And went to Die Hard. And then, I mean, all those movies during this era.
Incredibly iconic. But anyway, shout out to Bruce. All right, guys. I mean, we could be talking on and on about this. What do you want to talk? Favorite bits? You want to talk about a couple of things?
Let's do a 10 out of 10 rating from IMDb. This 10 out of 10 rating is lasted the test of time. Even if you're not a fan of the Lethal Weapon movies, you're going to find this movie funny. It fires off about 30 jokes a minute, about 20 you're going to laugh at. Watch it with friends. You won't regret it. Thank you, Bud Russ, May 14th, 2012.
Jesus Christ.
That was a 10 out of 10?
That was a 10 out of 10. Even though he said, there's going to be 30 jokes, but 10 of them you're going to be like, 20 of them you're going to laugh at.
Imagine sitting next to that fucking guy in a theater. They'll have to call the cops. They'll have to call the fucking cops.
Right. Yeah. Give me your 1 out of 10.
An hour and a half of pure crap. I rented this movie. I have no idea why I even considered it. I watched it, and about 15 minutes into it, I felt like I was already to die. That's how bad it was. It was great. Great cast.
Have you seen the name?
Yeah, Idio.
No, I do.
Oh, I do. I do cam stuff. Oh, I do cam stuff. Oh, so, my God.
So I said to, I found the review that Steve was reading, and I said, did you see the name? And he started off by saying Ideo, and I said, no, it's I Do. Say it again, Steve.
I Do Cam Stuff.
He does cam stuff.
Yeah, he's in a way.
That's June 18, 2002.
Yeah. He has his own website. It's called OnlyFan. Holy shit, mate. It's a lot
of
existence.
I don't know which one's worse, the 10 out of 10 or the 1 out of 10.
Oh, man. Oh, dude, we went to the polar opposites of this wide spectrum of bullshit.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Holy shit. Guys, is it ratings time, or do we have to deliberate any longer on this?
I think it's ratings time. Because there are... Yeah, I'll put it in my ratings.
Who wants to go first?
I picked it, so I'll go first. All right.
You should go last.
But I'll go first, and I'll... Okay. Look, all right. This film has a lot of fun member berries about it for me. I was thinking of the jokes or saying the jokes as they were happening. There were so many parts of it that I still love. I still love Samuel L. Jackson's flashback to shoot him. And, you know, and the mime, like with the gun to Whoopi Goldberg. I love that sort of stuff. And again, it made a lot of the stuff that I find funny now. I can see where it's all cultivated from. And it's movies like this. It is one of the worst spoof movies I've rewatched again. And normally I rewatch a spoof movie and I go, I can see why I found that bit funny with this one. You guys are right. There is so many jokes that fall flat in this movie. I still love the, I'm just going for a meaningless naked butt walk in the moonlight. I still love that scene. It's so stupid. I normally say if I'll watch it again, I give it 7 or above. I would watch Loaded Weapon again because of member berries, but I'm rating it like 3.5. 3.5.
Fucking hell.
Kiwi, strawberry, kiwi, passion fruit things.
Okay. I know it's rating times, but we forgot about to talk about the love interest in this, which is Kathy Ireland.
Yeah, we did.
Did we talk about her? I don't think we did.
No, we haven't talked about her at all.
Yeah. I mean, the entire Basic Instinct sequence, for example, goes way too long. And as we're watching it, I thought, where's Wayne Knight? Because I completely forgot that Wayne Knight was in the original Basic Instinct. But it seems like if you take it out, like you could easily change the ADR or whatever, or that sequence, and all of a sudden it's a comedy. Basically, it's not a comedy. You know what I mean? But it's the entire sequence of, like, you could have had him come in this, and it just wasn't there. I don't know why. But the entire beaver joke that starts from that as well is so fucking stupid.
Yeah. I mean, she's... Her role in it is just to be eye candy, and it's made really plain when you first meet her character, and she's got her hair up, and it's done by a completely different actress.
Yeah, and that actress is Alice Bisley. She's a comedian, and she's really funny, you know. But it's the thing that really surprised me was how, and she's in this movie to be eye candy, okay? That's her role in this. And I didn't realize if it was a type or whatever, but there's some proportions to her body or figure that kind of threw me a little. Like her legs looked really, really, really skinny. And I thought that's like unhealthily skinny. So I don't want to body shame anyone. I'm not in the position to body shame anybody, but it's not even that. It's just that it's something that I never noticed. You know, she has beautiful eyes. She's a beautiful looking woman, but she's also, I don't know if that was a type, like the kind of heroin chic kind of thing. Like very, very unhealthily thin. Like,
if you think about the era of when this was made, they were still probably pushing speed as a weight loss.
Yeah.
You know, it's it's so, you know, when you think back to like how people used to complain about how people view women and how people viewed looks, you think to yourself, oh, it wasn't that bad. And then you see films like this where you're like, oh, right, they were basically pushing the agenda that this is the perfect woman shape, or this is the perfect body dysmorphic thing that you should be striving for. And it's, you know, it's one of those things that in hindsight,
questionable beauty standards.
Yeah, and it's, you know, especially me being a dad and to a 3-year-old daughter, and just thinking to myself, thank God we don't live in the 80s or the 90s where all of that was being pushed on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, there are other things that she'll have to deal with, but that's a different story. We also didn't talk about an actor that I just, he's phenomenal in everything. In another character actor, it's F. Murray Abraham. He plays Harold Lecter in this. Wasn't he in a series?
Wasn't he in Stargate?
Yeah, but he's in a comedy series where he plays a writer, a video game writer.
Yeah, Mythic Quest.
It's in Mythic Quest as well. Yeah, yeah, it's phenomenal. by the guys from Always Sunny.
He got removed from the cast for reasons.
Yeah,
yeah, and
which, funnily enough, were akin to the character he played.
Yeah, F. Murray. The funny thing is, again, F. Murray Abraham appears in Last Action Hero. And he doesn't come as the same character, but again, it's all of these connections with Last Action Hero. And I'm still going to stick to my 3.5 out of 10, because films like Last Action Hero were really good at pointing foibles at the action industry.
Yeah, but it's within the piss out of the tropes,
Within a story. So, and there was no real story to this. Like, even the MacGuffins were quickly forgotten.
Yeah, you also forgot to mention that Arnold is in it, so it doesn't matter what it is. It's, as long as it has Arnold in it,
It's got an image of Stallone. So,
Steve.
Okay, Steve. So I'm going to say I'm following suit with Ricky, 3.5. It's a below standard spoof movie. It has some quirky, fun parts to it. It's got an amazing cast, underutilized. I mean, that's the problem. And I'm going to go 3.5 snow cones.
No bad at all.
Snow cone!
Snow chains, snow chains. Man, what can I say? We started drinking. I wasn't planning to have a drink yesterday, but Steve came over and we started watching this movie. And after the opening sequence, the first three jokes hit.
I turned up and you already poured the drinks.
Yeah,
you
were already poured and sat on the table. I said to you, basically, brace yourself, because there's no other fucking way we're going to be able to watch this movie. So we had the first drink, and the opening sequence, the first three jokes fell flat, and I went to pick up the bottle. So this movie drove us to drinking. That's a fact. And we paid for it dearly today, so I feel pretty rough. What can I say? I'm not going to be watching this movie again. And it's one of those, unlike the movies that we mentioned earlier and in different episodes, in other episodes we mentioned, the magnetic quality of some movies. You know, if they're playing on somebody else's screen, or if you're on an airplane and someone's playing it, would you peek at their screen for an uncomfortable amount of time? You know what I mean? Until you get caught. Like, would you do that with this one? Maybe I would on a plane just because it's inappropriate. But it's not a showstopper for me. I'm not going to stop my plans to watch this. But it would evoke the good memories. I would walk away going, yeah, and I'll just picture a couple of sequences very briefly. It's not much credit to give to a movie. So I think this would be the only time in the history of our show on the eve of the 25th episode of Screen Divers, I will give this movie a 3.5.
So
It's unanimous.
It's a unanimous dog shit of a movie. It's a unanimous turd. Ah, by the way, there would be no John Wick without this movie. Because when we got reminded that the entire saga of Jack Colt starts because they took his dog, I turned around to Steven and went, holy shit, man, that's John Wick. That's what they did to Jack. That's what they did to Wick.
You've just 3.5 watts before I go into what
it
I want to say.
It is 3.5 golden retrievers.
Hey.
3.5 I'm surprised Claudius. That none of us actually said beavers.
Hey, there we go. Now, I know that we've done our ratings, but yeah. I feel like this film for me is a little bit like The Incredible Burt Wonderstone. The more I go away from it, the more some of the sequences make me laugh. So the first one that I'm going to say is when they're on the beach and it's like, if only they knew that Claire was the one who was more of the risk taker. And the dog's like spraying lighter fluid onto a barbecue. That was funny. Anyway, do you guys have any favorite lines? Because I've got one favorite line that I want to share.
I do, but I mentioned it earlier. Yeah, I don't know how John Lovitz manages to make this movie so fucking funny at times. Like, it's the delivery of is the word orange in that sequence during the kind of the... He didn't zine as well. Like, he leans closer to... He whispers it in his ear at the end of it. So it's like, orange. It's just hilarious. I just thought that was my favorite line of this movie, actually.
Nice. Steve?
Give me a name. Weren't your parents supposed to do that?
Love it again.
Yeah, perfect.
Mine is from the actor Lance Kinsey, who was in the Police Academy movies, and it was a line: "My wife and I haven't had sex in over 2 years. I have a 6-month-old daughter."
And on that note, this was Umba.
This was Ricky,
and this was Steve.
You know what would really suck if we ended this episode with the climax of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, mamma mia, mamma mia. Mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me. For me.